Let me bring you songs from the woods to make you feel much better than you could know. I'll buy you six babies to put in your stable, six golden apples for the night. I am the first piper who calls a sweet tune, but I must be gone by the seventh day. So come on, I'm a whistler, I have a pipe and I've got to play. Get ready, I'm a whistler, I whistle along on the seventh day. Whistle along on the seventh day.
The 1977 hit album, Songs from the Wood.
But you have to remember that it isn't just me, it's very easy because I'm the one who does most of the talking and I stand near the front of the stage. I mean, Jethro Tull has not been me plus a bunch of, you know, occasionally changing sort of backup musicians. I mean, it's always been a band, and the band identity has always come through very strongly in writing and rehearsing songs. I mean, I may write the lyrics and the tune, but the way they turn out as arrangements and the sound and the way they come across is always been, I wouldn't say always, but usually, certainly 80% of the time at least, is a band effort, you know? Yeah. And the people in the band shape the music. Albums like Thick as a Brick and Passion Play, Songs from the Wood and so on, I mean, those are all very much band efforts, you know, not me at all. I mean, Thick as a Brick was really a group effort.
Hi, this is Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull in the studio with Redbeard, and we're talking about Songs from the Wood. We might even start singing, who knows?
With the 45th anniversary of the release of the highly successful Songs from the Wood album, which was early February 1977. When that album came out, there was simply nothing in rock or on American rock radio that even remotely sounded like Songs from the Wood. Tell me how that major left turn, following Too Old to Rock and Roll, Too Young to Die, how did that occur? I mean, that was a bit of a stretch. That had to be a bit of a risk.
Probably Too Old to Rock and Roll, Too Young to Die was more of a risk because it was going into a world that avoided, for instance, the many of the influences that I'd had and used on previous albums. And Songs from the Wood really came about partly because our PR guy, an American, a New York American famous guy called Joe Lustig, who served as manager and publicist to a number of British folk acts. He was a huge Anglophile. He was mad about British folk music and the bands who did it. A big buddy of Mel Brooks. And so Joe was the archetypal, very, very loud and forceful New York publicist who ruffled a lot of feathers. I mean, people liked him, but he was just a bit much. You know, he would just be so full on. It might work in Manhattan, but it didn't work in the hallowed halls of the music industry in London. He was barred from Chrysalis Records. they had a man on the door specifically to stop Joe Lustig getting into the office to harangue people for not giving his artist the due consideration that he thought they should enjoy. But Joe was a great guy, and he was our publicist for a while, and he was allowed to call himself our manager as part of a deal. He didn't get paid as a manager. He wasn't really a manager. It was a feather in his cap that he could refer to himself as the manager of Jethro Tull. And he and I always got on pretty well. I'm not sure that he got on well with the other guys in the band, but he certainly got on. We got on well. He was a great guy, great character. And he gave me a book as a Christmas present, which was a book about English folk legends and myths. And it was a really interesting book. I mean, it was quite an encyclopedic book. I mean, it wasn't a fanciful, you know, Dungeons and Dragons kind of book. It was quite a literary accounting of all the stories and the origins of those stories about myths and legends. And I found it very interesting. And immediately some of these elements jumped out at me as an idea of, well, let's make an album using some of these references and give it a kind of a folky feel without it attempting to sound like traditional English folk. It's drawing on broadly on British folk music, but still, I think it's a rock album, and its success is because it's a progressive folk rock album, if you want to call it that. But it's absolutely due to Joe giving me unintentionally something that I could use as reference points, really, for songs that I hope don't sound too rooted in the past, because rather like the Zealot Gene, I like taking references that have some historical point of origin, and then you can extrapolate those into the modern age, or you start writing a song about the modern age, the world we live in, and you work backwards just out of interest to find some earlier examples that you can refer to. And so I guess in some ways it's not too different back then to the way that I would be working today. Some kind of an underlying theme that you can build on. But, you know, is that concept album progressive rock? Well, you bet it is. And I don't have a problem with that.
Let me bring you songs from the woods to make you feel much better than you could know. Better than you could
dust
know.
Dust you down from tip to toe.
Dust you down from tip to toe.
Show you how the garden grows.
Show you how the garden
Hold
grows.
Hold you steady as you go.
Hold steady as you
Join
go.
The chorus if you can.
It'll make of you an honest man.
Let me bring you love from the fields. Poppies red and roses filled with summer rain. To heal the wound and still the pain that threatens again and again. As we drag down every lover's lane.
Life's long celebrations here. I'll toast you all in.
Let me bring you all things refined. Galley hides, lute songs served in chilling ale. Greetings, well met fellow, hail. I am the wind to fill your sail. I am the cross to take your nail.
A singer of these ageless times, with kitchen prose and gutter rhyme.
Songs from the woods make you feel much better.
Let me bring you love from the fields. Poppies red and roses filled with summer rain. To heal the wound and still the pain that threatens again and again. As we drag down every lover's lane. Life's long celebrations here. I'll toast you all in any cheer. Songs from the world make me feel much better.
Ian Anderson had used his decade of Jethro Tull's success to invest in an actual working farm west of London, and the experience influenced the 1977 hit album Songs from the Wood.
But you have to remember that it isn't just me. It's very easy because I'm the one who does most of the talking and I stand near the front of the stage. I mean, Jethro Tull has not been me plus a bunch of, you know, occasionally changing sort of backup musicians. I mean, it's always been a band, and the band identity has always come through very strongly in writing and rehearsing songs. I mean, I may write the lyrics and the tune, but the way they turn out as arrangements and the sound and the way they come across is always been, I wouldn't say always, but usually, certainly 80% of the time at least, is a band effort, you know? Okay. And the people in the band shape the music much more than I do. I mean, it's down to the people who are in there. And the band has gone through a lot of different qualities of sound, different sort of musical styles and, you know, musical emphasis in one direction or another as a result of the people who happen to be in the group at the time. I play my part. I go with the flow for the most part. I mean, there are some albums where I have been more dominating in the sense of doing the arrangements and really shaping the music in a much more, you know, selfish way, in the sense that I say, this is how I want it to sound, this is how it's going to be. Albums like Thick as a Brick and Passion Play, Songs from the Wood and so on, I mean, those are albums very much band efforts, you know, not me at all. I mean, Thick as a Brick was really a group effort, you know.
Really?
You want
my feet and go back to the farm. What I appreciate, you want no deviate, I might come to some harm. I'm not inclined to act to refine, if that's how it goes. Oh, my born hunting girl, I'm just a normal local so-and-so.
Hi, this is Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull in the studio with Redbeard, and we're talking about songs from the wood. We might even start singing. Who knows?
Yeah, there is a marked step up in sonic quality when we get to songs from the wood. When I assemble all these wonderful deluxe editions with the Stephen Wilson remixes and remastering, what do you attribute that to? Where were you tracking, for instance, songs from the wood? Is that just a coincidence, or because it sounds marvelous? It doesn't sound dated at all.
Well, the album was recorded at Maison Rouge Studios, which was my own studios that I built back in 1976, and it had state of the art recording equipment in it, and it was a well-designed room. It sounded okay, but it was recorded on analog tape, and necessarily that you get a lot of leakage of different instruments. You know, that if you listen to the guitar track, you can hear the drums in the background, and so on. So it's a little bit polluted in a sense by its own musical component parts. And also with analog tape, even if you use Dolby noise reduction, there was always going to be that hiss, that hum, that general noise that would come, even from a high quality microphone, would induce a certain amount of hum. And when you get to that and transfer all of those analog multi-track masters to the digital world, you can then painstakingly just separate all the musical bits that you want to hear. So if there's a few seconds of silence between a couple of guitar phrases, you can get rid of it, and you can clean things up so that suddenly the music has a transparency that it didn't have in its analog incarnation, and it just gives that little bit of daylight through the clouds. You know, that you can hear the spaces between the musical notes that much more clearly. The downside is, of course, these are analog tapes that, at the point where they were converted to 24-bit digital audio, were very, very old, and the oxide was beginning to crumble and fall off and had to be baked in an oven to glue the oxide, the bit with the magnetic oxide that had the music embedded in it, onto the plastic backing of the tape. And then you had one chance to at that point, run it over onto a digital medium. And inevitably, there's a little bit of a loss, you know. So in some cases with some songs, some albums, you know, usually the high end suffers a little bit. But there's a bit of a trade-off, really, between, you know, trying to salvage these ancient analog tapes, but with the benefit on the other side of being able to create that greater transparency. And on balance, you know, I think the end result is a clearer, rather more sparkling sound quality than perhaps the original analog masters had.
With your legs in the air, la, 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 la. you having company? Yes, take it in your hands. Go down a Velvedrine with a countryman who's a young girl's fancy and an old maid's dream. Tell your mother that you walked all night on Velvedrine. One dusky half hour's right up to the north. There lies your reputation, all that you worth. Where the scent of wild roses stands the melted green. Tell your mother that you walked all night on Velvedrine. And the long grass flowers in the evening cool. And August red delights, maybe April's blue. But think not of that, my love. I'm tied against the sea, and I am growing up to meet you down on Velvedrine.
I'm glad that Stephen Wilson has chosen to do these things, because I certainly didn't have the stomach for going back over all that ground and then having to re-examine and try and rework it. You know, Stephen enjoyed going back and recreating to some extent the balances of all the instruments, the stereo positioning of the instruments. You know, he hadn't done it once, whereas I had. So I'm very happy that I could leave that to somebody else who was excited about it and finding it exhilarating to do, whereas for me, it would have been going back over old ground. It would have been a real chore to do that. And I remember talking to George Martin about the remix of Sergeant Pepper, and you know, his son did that work. And I asked George. It was difficult because George was very, very deaf in his final years. And this was not long before he died. And but he said to me, he said, you know, thank God my son could do this, because number one, I couldn't hear it. Number two, to go back over that and have to try to relive something that you did, you know, 40 years before or 50 years before, even maybe no, 45 years before, perhaps. You know, he was very grateful that he didn't have to do it, but he sort of oversaw the project to give it credibility. So for George, it wasn't really that he was the guy going back and remixing it. Jimmy Page, who famously has, you know, remixed some of the Led Zeppelin classics, I don't know to what extent he really, really was the man sitting behind a mixing console and hands-on doing it, or whether he was just supervising it.
I think he was pretty hands-on.
Yeah, well, that's good that he was able to do that, and that makes him a more of a man than I, because I don't feel I could have summoned the energy and enthusiasm to do it. Having said that, if I'd been asked to remix a Led Zeppelin album, I'd be at it like a shot. I mean, that'd be great. But you know, in the case of doing my own things, no, been there, done that, and very happy for someone else to take on the chore.
Whistle along on the seventh day. Whistle along on the seventh day.
is Redbeard in the studio thanking my guest and congratulating Ian Anderson. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.